we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
This is James, and welcome to my show, the BCP Podcast. As I sit here in front of this microphone and that camera, if you're watching or listening, please take it to heart that I really wish I could just electronically, through zeros and ones, go through the camera and or the microphone, appear to you in person, wherever you're listening or watching to this, and give you a big embrace, a big hug, and thank you for not only for your support of this show, but for being a patriotic American or a patriotic supporter of America for those of you who are not in the United States of America. I want you to feel that, and I'll give you a moment to feel it. All right. Now, America's a great country. We have fallen into, to say disrepair would be an understatement. To say that we have delayed and deferred maintenance would be an understatement. We have fallen into the category of being a banana republic. Now, the leftists, the Marxists, the Democrats would have you believe that America is great, and that is, it is great. Let me finish the sentence because that sounded strange when I hear myself say it. The left would have you believe that because America is great, that's why all these illegal aliens are coming, because they want to participate in the American dream, and they are leaving behind their countries because they are, we know they're economic illegal immigrants, but they're blaming it on climate change and all other kinds of nonsense. But what we're seeing here is lawlessness and what we know to be an invasion. You don't just bum rush your way into another country, another sovereign country, especially when it's throngs of military-aged men. Back in the day, when things were sane, that would be considered an invasion, and the military would mow them down for trespassing into our country, also known as an invasion. So here's a flashback of something that took place last month, a little over a month ago. You may recall that there were Texas National Guard that became overrun by illegal aliens. Now, for those of you watching, this is the scene where a whole bunch of illegal aliens just pushed through the Texas National Guard, disregard, and just ran up to the next point, which was the actual border. Total disregard for law and order. Now, a few days ago, we had news that an El Paso County judge had dismissed the border riot charges against 140 migrants. This happened about 3 days ago, but I have an update to this story, but let me bring it up to speed. A county judge dismissed 140 cases against migrants charged in an April 12th riot at the U.S.-Mexico border after determining there was no probable cause for their arrests. County Court at Law 7 Judge Ruben Morales dismissed 140 cases during a hearing on Monday after ruling Texas Department of Safety, Public Safety state troopers failed to provide probable cause for the mass arrest. Quote, after reviewing the affidavit, I don't believe that probable cause exists, Morales said during the hearing. I don't believe there's probable cause for these individuals to continue to be detained for the offense of riot participation. The migrants will now be released from state custody. However, all 140 migrants are still facing federal charges of illegal entry to the U.S. and will be turned over to federal custody, which of course we know just means that they would be allowed to come right in. Now, that was the story as of a few days ago. And once again, if you want to see, for those of you watching the show, this is El Paso County Judge Rui Morales on Monday. Now, it doesn't matter that the illegals cut through Constantino wire and rush over the border illegally. There's no probable cause there. There's nothing there, according to Morales. Well, the district attorney for El Paso, Bill Hicks, has indicted the 140 illegal aliens on rioting charges since the leftist county judge attempted to dismiss the case against them. So the El Paso Times is reporting that Hicks presented the charges to a grand jury on Tuesday the following day after the El Paso County Judge Rui Morales dismissed the charges on the grounds that they lacked probable cause. This is in his own words. "We took all 151 of those cases to a grand jury because the judge's ruling was limited to the complaint affidavit in front of him. It allowed us to take the broader case to the grand jury. We presented the case as a whole. We presented videotape evidence of what happened. The grand jury believed there was, in fact, probable cause. The citizens of El Paso, through the grand jury, essentially overruled the judge's ruling and found probable cause to believe that the riots did occur. Traditionally, we reserve the grand jury for felony indictments and we don't take misdemeanor cases to a grand jury. However, when there's a question regarding probable cause, I believe it is fair to take these cases to 12 citizens of our community." El Paso County Public Defender Kelly Childress, who is defending the illegal aliens against criminal prosecution, condemned the indictment and called it a violation of their human rights. "It is not a human right to trespass and break the law and go into another country of which you are not a citizen. We are not globalists. We believe in sovereignty of nations. We don't want a one world government. Think of this as capitalism on the biggest macro scale possible. In theory, like lots of things that in theory seem good, but in practice absolutely fail. And a lot of these things like communism in theory don't even sound good, but they're able to convince some people. But when you look at actual implementation of these policies or political dogmas, they fall apart. So in theory, some people say, well, it'd be great if we had a one world government. There'd be no wars, no borders. Imagine all the people and all of that BS. Okay? I still like that song. I grew up on it. But I digress. If you have one world government, you are going to have tyranny, because you have tyranny anytime you have people in authority over other people. The 4% of our population are sociopaths, and sociopaths will find their ways into positions of power and authority. It has always happened, always will happen, ever since that snake, Satan, the devil, whispered in the ear of Cain to off his brother. There has always been very evil people who want to have power over other people's lives, either to end them or to enslave them. That's why we can't have a one world government. But if we have a whole bunch of sovereign countries and states, then thinking as a capitalist, then there's competition for freedom. You can live in the United States with a constitution that used to be upheld and choose, theoretically, not to live in tyrannical, despotic China or Iran. That is why we believe in multiple nations with sovereignty, because a whole bunch of sovereign free nations are a buffer against the tyranny of a one world government. So when these people come bum rushing into our country illegally, that is in fact, however you want to believe it is or is not, it is in fact an invasion. When you cut down Constantino wire and you push through United States and Texas National, United States military and or Texas National Guard and overrun them, you are breaking the law. This is not a violation of your human rights. What about the right of American citizens and our Texas National Guard? I say that as if I'm a Texan already. What about their rights? I guess they want us to forget about that. So we've got some good news on this front, but of course, public defender Kelly Childress says, we pretty much predicted that that was their plan, which is why we sought a probable cause hearing in advance of today's grand jury. I can't say that we didn't know it was coming. We didn't know exactly when. Knowing that it was coming doesn't at all ease the fact that I think it's a horrible move. I think it's a blatant violation of constitutional rights and human rights. What constitutional rights? What constitutional rights, Kelly Childress? These people are not citizens of our country. What constitutional rights? What about the constitutional right we have in the Constitution to have our borders protected? To have our sovereignty protected? And to have magistrates? To have military? To have law enforcement? And representatives at every level of our representative form of democracy known as a republic? What about our constitutional rights to be protected from enemies, foreign and domestic? We have that constitutional right, and that trumps any supposed rights of illegal invaders into our country. Childress goes on to say, I find it amazing that they were able to indict 140 misdemeanor cases basically overnight, yet I have hundreds and hundreds of felony cases waiting to be charged for more than a year. They can claim all they want. This isn't about politics. It's about immigration, and it isn't about immigration laws, but their actions scream otherwise. Isn't it amazing the difference in priority between leftists and God-fearing, constitutional-loving, even if you're not God-fearing, constitutional-loving, law and order types? It's literally night and day. Literally night and day. But guess what? If you are tired of illegal immigration and you want all of these illegal immigrants that have come into our nation to be deported once President Trump comes back in, guess what? You're not a racist. You're not a right-wing crazy person either. Check this out. This is from Axios Today, Thursday, April 25th. Axios. Exclusive poll. America warms to mass deportations. And when they say America, they're not talking about right-wing America. They're not talking about MAGA America First extremists or whatever silly new version of the deplorables that the leftists and their cohorts and mainstream media are trying to push down people's throats. When they say America warms, they mean America warms, including Democrat voters. Let's get into this. This is juicy. Share of Americans who say they support mass deportation of undocumented immigrants. 51% of the general public. 56% of whites. 45% of Latinos, and 40% of blacks. Now, of course, it's really hard to argue that if 45% of Latinos want... Okay, let's talk about where these people are coming from. The mass deportation, lots of Central Americans and Venezuelans. We're seeing a lot more Chinese than usual and a lot of Africans and people from the Middle East. So it would be ridiculous to make the case that it's racist for Americans that want these people deported back to their country when Axios, no friend to the conservative cause, says that 45% of Latinos want mass deportation and they support mass deportation and 40% of blacks. Oh, I guess it's because it's the 56% of whites. If we see reporting on this, of course, they will only show you the white statistic. But for those of you watching the show, I'm putting this up in front of you so you can see it for yourselves. This is where it gets nutty. Political affiliation, 68% of Republicans, 46% of independents, and 42% of Democrats. Can we say that we are in the middle of a wow moment? A wow moment, folks. 42% of Democrats, according to Axios, are warming or have warmed up and support mass deportation. How is it statistically, without them rigging the 2024 election, can they possibly make a case that Joe Biden even has a snowball's chance in hell. Or doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell. How do they even make a case that Joe Biden is even in the running? So those are the numbers you have. Half Americans, including 42% of Democrats, say they support mass deportations of undocumented immigrants, according to a new Axios Vibe survey by the Harris Poll. And 30% of Democrats, as well as 46% of Republicans, now say they'd end birthright citizenship, something guaranteed under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So almost a third of Democrats don't want people to automatically be citizens of the country when they come in. Seems smart to me. Of course, birthright citizenship means that if you were a child or descendant of a black slave, you were automatically a citizen and therefore could vote and have all the freedoms and all the liberties granted to American citizens. It was never meant to allow Juanita and Juan to come in illegally, pop a baby, and then that baby is a citizen. Now, what's very strange is this birthplace citizenship is not just an American thing, but it's more common in our Western Hemisphere in the Americas than in other places. So just so you know, that's a common law in Latin American countries and what have you. And that has, they've taken the 14th Amendment way past what its original intent was. Yes, when it comes to the Constitution, I am an originalist. What do you think about this, folks? What do you think about so many people being, whether Democrats, Republicans, black, white, Latino, and the generations as well, boomers, 60%, Gen X, 53%, millennials, 48%, even over a third of Gen Z want mass deportation. And this is where I say it's tough to make a case that Joe Biden is even in the running for 2024. Amid a record number of border crossings, nearly two-thirds of Americans said illegal immigration is a real crisis, not a politically driven media narrative. I was surprised at the public support for large-scale deportation, said Mark Penn, chairman of the Harris Poll and former pollster for President Clinton. I think they're just sending a message to politicians. Get this under control. Yeah, they're trying to spin it. Even though the people say, yeah, we're for mass deportation, the Clinton people are saying, well, I think people are just frustrated. They're just saying get it under control. They're not really saying mass deportations. No, people are saying they want mass deportations. People aren't that stupid. People know what they want. Ridiculous. But here's why I'm making the case in this particular instance that yet again, Joe Biden doesn't have a chance. Because it is President Trump who has vowed to carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. He's talking about sweeping raids and detention camps, and they would target millions of illegal aliens in our countries. Americans typically aren't eager to deport immigrants who have put down roots in the U.S., but the poll of U.S. adults suggests that the dynamic may be changing amid rising fears about crime and violence. What about rising fears? We already are living in fear and concern about the rising level of illegal immigrants. These are criminals. They're not sending their best. President Trump is right. We are going to the Manuelitos all over again on a larger scale. It's not just Castro, okay? In Venezuela, you have Maduro and other countries letting the dregs of their society out and sending them to the United States so they can illegally come here and wreak havoc. It is warfare, not the traditional warfare, but the warfare that the other countries seem to know how to play better than we do. Now, of course, we have the CIA doing all kinds of black ops and things out there too. I'm not saying we don't play these games. I'm not saying we're squeaky clean. I'm saying they're playing this game quite well, right in front of us, and Americans are not buying it. Americans are not buying it. So, what are your thoughts? If you're on this show, I'm pretty sure I know where you're leaning on this. Now, let's transition. Let's transition to a state that has had to deal a lot with this porous border. And I'm not just talking about Texas, and I'm not just talking about California. It still blows my mind that New Mexico never enters the national conversation when it comes to the border. They are very leftist leaning when it comes to this, and they don't make a lot of noise, and they have a small population. Perhaps that's why. But let's turn to Arizona. What is the part of the game here? Mass immigration, let these people vote in the 2024 election. That's how they think they're going to win. All these mass illegal immigrants, tell them to vote for Joe Biden, who let them in. And who is one of their cohorts? Well, another fellow election stealer, the fake, false, fraudulent governor of Arizona, Katie Hobbs. Lawless Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. This is what she did, being reported today by the Gateway Pundit. She vetoed a bill to require proof of residency for voting. Of course she did. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs on Tuesday vetoed legislation that would define residency in Arizona and require proof of residency, such as a home rental agreement or ownership, to vote in the state's elections. Hobbs stole the 2022 election for governor from Carrie Lake, and she's getting ready to rig the 2024 election for Joe Biden. SB 2581 stipulates that a resident, quote, is an individual who has actual physical presence in the state for at least 181 days with the intent to remain, but provides exceptions for individuals to vote if they provide evidence of employment, residential property, child school enrollment, and active duty military. Okay? House veto comes as flyers instructing illegal immigrants to vote for Joe Biden in the forthcoming U.S. election have been reportedly distributed at NGOs in Mexico, according to an investigation by the Oversight Project. Voters are not required to show proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections on a federal-only ballot. Now, Katie Hobbs is an illegitimate governor and wasn't duly elected by the people. So any reason or excuse she gives for doing this doesn't really matter, because she's not working for the people. She knows she stole the election and shouldn't be there. She's not working for us. She's working for them. But let's see what she had to say was her reasoning. Hobbs vetoed the bill, claiming that it creates an additional unnecessary barriers for individuals registering to vote. Critics of the bill claim that it would bar out-of-state college students from voting in Arizona's elections, as the bill defines resident as an individual physical presence in the state for 181 days with the intent to remain. However, the bill outlines six exceptions, which would have allowed students and temporary residents to vote. So once again, her lies are broken down by the text of the bill itself, which made the following stipulations: employment, purchase of residential property, rental of residential property, purchase of real property for residential purposes, the enrollment of the individual or the children's or the individual's children in a school district or a charter school, active duty military service member identification for service members and their dependents. I kind of went through that, but an individual enrolled in a school district seems like that wouldn't just be for primary and elementary, K through 12 enrollment, but could be used by a college student to vote as well. Oh, that's too complicated. Then damn it, they shouldn't be in college if they can't figure out how to freaking damn vote in an election in a state of which they are now going to school. Okay, let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about lawfare. And how about this little doozy of a reminder? A lot of people don't know, or what the media won't tell you, according to Chuck. Stormy Daniels still owes President Trump $300,000 plus interest for making false claims against him. Now, of course, this is important to note, seeing that President Trump is in the middle of this whole hush money payment scam with DA Alvin Bragg. Just thought I'd mention that, just in case you weren't aware. Now let's turn over to the Supreme Court today, Thursday. This is what we have from the Supreme Court. They heard oral arguments today on Trump's presidential immunity claim in Jack Smith's January 6th case in D.C. Now the case made its way to the Supreme Court after the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled Trump was not immune from prosecution. Trump's lawyers had argued that Trump is immune from federal prosecution for alleged crimes committed while he served as U.S. president. Specifically, they're making the argument that he can't be tried and he's got immunity for doing things he did in his official capacity as president. So the president has, in his official capacity, the right and the duty to look into allegations of voter and election fraud, part of his job to uphold the Constitution. And he's got immunity, the case is being made, for acting on those duties and responsibilities as president. That's really what's at play here. Now, as been stated, in 234 years of American history, no president ever faced criminal prosecution for his official acts. Until 19 days ago, no court had ever addressed whether immunity from such prosecution exists. That's what Trump lawyers wrote last month in their filing. To this day, no appellate court has addressed it. The question stands among the most complex, intricate, and momentous issues that this court will be called to decide. Of course, everything is unprecedented and new as they figure out ways to stop the will of the American people and to punish and stop Trump for being the greatest president in the modern era. John Sauer, a Missouri-based attorney for Trump, gave an opening statement on Thursday and argued that Jack Smith's indictment uses vague statutes to criminalize core authority of the presidency. Of course they are. Now let's remember what happened previous to this before we get into the oral arguments this morning. A three-judge panel for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals had previously asked John Sauer if Trump would be immune if he ordered assassinations. So back in January, on the 9th of January, a three-judge panel heard oral arguments and appeared skeptical of Trump's immunity claims. One judge, of course, a Biden appointee, even asked Trump attorney John Sauer if he would be subject to criminal prosecution if he ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate his political rivals in the guise of his official duties. Now, of course, this is ridiculous. This borders on conspiracy nuttery. It is conspiracy nuttery, which, of course, when we say things are actually happening or there's evidence of actual happening, the left, the Marxist, even the rhinos and the DC establishment and the Mockingbird media Muppets, the comrades of the commies on the Democrat and rhino side, call us conspiracy theorists. Yet they are always pushing false conspiracy theories all the time, whether it is the Russian collusion hoax or that President Trump is going to assassinate people. Which is interesting because it's the left that actually want President Trump dead and want him assassinated. We'll actually get to that again here in a second. So then let's go back to what happened today. As expected, the liberal justices, similar to the appellate court judges, started floating absurd hypotheticals and conspiracy theory type nonsense. So let's jump into this morning where leftist liberal Justice Elena Kagan tries to make yet again, like the appellate court judges, that President Trump, or questioning whether President Trump could ask the military to do things that were unconstitutional in as an official act and therefore be immune.
If a president sells nuclear secrets to a foreign adversary, is that immune? How about if a president orders the military to stage a coup?
I think that, as the Chief Justice pointed out earlier, where there is a whole series of, you know, sort of guidelines against that, so to speak, like the UCMJ prohibits the military from following a plainly unlawful act. If one adopted Justice Alito's test, that would fall outside.
Now, John Sauer makes a great case that there are already laws that would prohibit this action and it would be illegal. And he brings up several times that if a president is doing something that he shouldn't be doing, the framers of the Constitution had an answer to that. It's called impeachment. But Kagan's worried about what if we can't get President Trump? Like, we have not been able to get President Trump in a hypothetical, of course. And we need to get him after he's no longer in office. She really, really, really hammers this, almost as if she believes President Trump could be, is, or would be guilty of trying to use the military for a coup.
As I'll say in response to all these kinds of hypotheticals, has to be impeached and convicted before he can be criminally prosecuted. But I emphasize to the court that—
Well, he's gone. Let's say this president who ordered the military to stage a coup. He's no longer president. He wasn't impeached. He couldn't be impeached. But he ordered the military to stage a coup, and you're saying that's an official act.
I think it would depend.
That's immune.
I think it would depend on the circumstances whether it was an official act. If it were an official act, again, he would have to be impeached.
Well, what does that mean, depend on the circumstances? He was the president. He is the commander-in-chief. He talks to his generals all the time. And he told the generals, I don't feel like leaving office. I want to stage a coup. Is that immune?
If it's an official act, there needs to be impeachment and conviction beforehand because the framers viewed the that kind of
if
very
it's an
low
official
risk.
Act, is it an official act?
If it's an official act, it's impeachment.
Is it an official act?
On the way you've described that hypothetical.
So Lena Kagan here, Justice Kagan, gives a hypothetical. And, of course, the law is more nuanced than just doing a hypothetical. And John Sauer is trying to argue the point of the law that impeachment exists, that there are U.S. codes that would, for instance, prohibit the president from using the military to stage a coup. But she wants an answer whether that would be an official act or not under the president in this hypothetical without a whole bunch of details. And Trump attorney John Sauer is trying to say, look, there's laws and there's circumstances and there's certain details that would determine that. But she wants a definitive answer based on her hypothetical without all of those details. Now, if you believe that Elena Kagan, Justice Elena Kagan, let me be respectful, she is a justice, is arguing or asking this line of question, trying to get to the bottom of a very, very important constitutional and legal question, then, okay, this seems valid. My personal opinion is she's anti-Trump and trying to stoke fears that we must stop Trump because he could and would do this.
It could well be. I just don't know. You'd have to, again, it's a fact-specific, context-specific determination.
That answer sounds to me as though it's like, yeah, under my test, it's an official act, but that sure sounds bad, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly sounds very bad, and that's why the framers have a whole series of structural checks that have successfully, for the last 234 years, prevented that very kind of extreme hypothetical. And that is the wisdom of the framers. What they viewed as the risk that needed to be guarded against was not the notion that the president might escape, you know, a criminal prosecution for something, you know, sort of very, very unlikely in these unlikely scenarios. They viewed much more likely and much more destructive to the republic the risk of factional strife discussed by George Washington.
Now listen closer to the next part and tell me if it doesn't seem like Justice Kagan is trying to equate President Trump or a hypothetical president like President Trump, which of course she's really thinking Trump. She's trying to equate him or a future version of a Trump-like character as being just like King George of England during the foundation of this country, which led to first the Declaration of Independence and then the U.S. Constitution.
Framers did not put an immunity clause into the Constitution. They knew how to. There were immunity clauses in some state constitutions. They knew how to give legislative immunity. They didn't provide immunity to the president. And, you know, not so surprising, they were reacting against a monarch who claimed to be above the law. Wasn't the whole point that the president was not a monarch, and the president was not supposed to be above the law?
Now, I want to end this on a positive note because John Sauer absolutely knocks it out of the park. And pretty much, there's nothing more that Justice Kagan can say after this. He goes into the history of the Constitutional Convention. He goes into the Constitution briefly about checks and balances, and how all of this stuff was addressed, and she actually is wrong about the lack of immunity from the president. They actually did address all these things in the Constitution.
The president was not a monarch, and the president was not supposed to be above the law.
I would say two things in response to that. Immunity, they did put an immunity clause, and in a sense, they put in the executive vesting clause, which was originally understood to adopt a broad immunity principle that's set forth in the very broad language of Marbury against Madison. And also, they did discuss and consider what would be the checks on the presidency. And they did not say, oh, we need to have criminal prosecution. Right there at the Constitutional Convention, Benjamin Franklin says, we don't have that. That's not an option. Everybody cried out against that as unconstitutional. The structural check we're adopting is impeachment. And they're very clear on that in pages 64 to 69 of the second volume of Ferrand.
Thank you.
Bravo, John Sauer. Turned sour there, perhaps, for Justice Kagan at the end there. And the lawfare and the attacks on President Trump, the greatest president of our lifetime, continues. Thanks for being here. Big hug to all of y'all. Check back tomorrow because I will have yet another episode, another report, and another analysis. Until then, ciao, goodbye, God bless, and hold the line.
We're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.